Seems like just yesterday, the Pittsburgh Glass Center was proposed. And I remember that day. Gosh, I want to say it's been about 20 years. And it came and flourished to the point where programs with students can have things like reunions. And that's what we're about to talk about this morning. Jason Fork and Dana Laskowski are here representing the Pittsburgh Glass Center. And welcome to both of you. How are you?
Good.
It's nice to have you here. And let me ask you, Jason, I didn't think to look it up. Do you remember, do you know the founding date?
I think the Glass Center has been there about 13 years now.
Okay,
so.
I'm making it older before it's time. But how long have you been with the center?
I've been there. I moved to Pittsburgh in 2005 and through their apprentice program. And I've been there since, kind of running up the education in what we call the hot shop now.
And tell me first, there are folks that might just be wondering about the Glass Center and what it does. And, you know, many of us take glass for granted. We see glass used as containers. We see glass used in decorative works, from lampshades to bowls to vases. And it's got to come from somewhere. So tell us a bit about the art of glassmaking.
Well, at the Glass Center, we support artists that make glass, and we're an education facility as well. So we do a lot of classes on glass blowing, what we call flame working, where you're working on a torch, fusing and casting of glass, and also doing some cold work, which is any sort of laminating or engraving glass. But there's a really kind of a big world of glass arts out there, and there's a lot of different ways to work with the material that we like to support artists that want to, you know, figure out those things.
Are there many glass centers of the magnitude of the Pittsburgh Glass Center in the world?
No, the Glass Center is pretty internationally well-known facility. It's the reason that myself and most people that do work at the Glass Center have moved to Pittsburgh to be there, you know, with the community at the Pittsburgh Glass Center.
And where did you come from?
I grew up on a small farm in Kansas and just happened to get into glass when I was in college, and then really fell in love with the medium, and the opportunity to come here was a really, you know, great one. So I jumped on that when I had the opportunity.
Well, let's meet your colleague who is here today. Hi, Dana.
Hi.
Tell me a bit about yourself.
I attended Kappa in 2004, 2005, graduated in 2009, and I took the high school program with Jason starting in 2006 all the way till I graduated in 2009, and yeah, I got a really amazing experience out of it.
So you had an apprenticeship that of sorts that lasted for 3 years. I didn't realize that. Did you see each other weekly or daily?
It was once a week for 3 hours, but the second sort of semester that I came back for, I guess, Hot 2, I was there all the time and kind of lived there eventually.
You became a glass rat.
Yeah.
Is there a name? Well, I want to ask. There probably are names, but you became a glassophile.
Kind of like a pest.
Yeah.
But I was there so much that through the encouragement of Jason and the other people that worked at the Glass Center, and I became really close with them, and it just became such an integrated part of my life that I couldn't not go into glass.
Where did you grow up, Dana?
I grew up actually like 5 minutes away from the Glass Center in Highland Park.
Oh, so how convenient for you. And do you still live in Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
You've got a Pittsburgh Penn shirt on, so I'm kind of assuming that. Now, you graduated from Kappa when?
In 2009.
And did you go on to college?
Yeah, I actually went to Temple University and attended Tyler School of Art for 3 years. And the program really wasn't fitting what I wanted necessarily. It was an amazing program to be a part of, and they have an incredible hot shop and an incredible facility and teachers, but I decided to come back to Pittsburgh, so I've been here working with the Glass Center and, you know, making a little extra money. And
that's great. You don't sound apologetic, but you know, you have to be sure your heart's in what you're doing and that where you are makes sense. Mm-hmm. And for an artist, you know, I have a degree in engineering. I can't imagine what it's like to study art because there's so many issues of style and methodology that can vary, and also styles of education, too, that really need to fit with you, just like clothing would fit or anything else. So what do you think would surprise people about glassmaking, about hot shops? Because, I've seen demonstrations of glass blowing and bending. I kind of know how a furnace works, but there's a lot I have no idea about. What would people really be amazed by, do you think?
I think people are pretty amazed when they come into the studio of kind of the just how hot it is. You know, the temperatures that we're working with is the most surprising thing to people that are in the classes. We get them in front of those furnaces, and when you throw a number like 2,000 or 2,100 degrees out there, you think it's hot, but then when you stand in front of it and you feel that on your skin, you realize that's quite a bit hotter than anything you've ever been around before, most likely. So,
how do you get things into something that hot?
Well, usually for us, the bigger issue is getting things out of there. So the furnace, we load what we call cullet, which is just cold chunks of glass, right into the furnace and bring them up to melting temperature. And then the gathering process is taking the glass out of that furnace in order to, you know, to be able to use it for a blown object or any sort of sculpture that you might be working on. And that usually takes a bit of time in teaching people how to gather that glass.
Is that done with a ladle or some kind of implement?
We usually use what we call our standard kind of tools are a blowpipe, which is a stainless steel tube, and also a punty rod, which is just a stainless steel rod or a steel rod that we use. We preheat the end of those up so that the glass will stick to it, and then we kind of dip it down in there. And the closest thing I can kind of compare it to is if you've ever stuck a honey dipper in a honey pot and tried to kind of gather that honey up on there. So you keep it rotating and you try to keep that glass on there as you're drawing it out of that furnace.
And are your hands at the end of the honey dipper, like your gloved hands, I guess, or?
Well, we try not to use gloves, actually, so it's our uncovered hands at the end of that.
How do you stay safe?
You kind of get it, you get it down to a certain amount of time that you're not spending, you know, too long of a time up there, so it's not burning your hands too much. So we don't wear, a lot of people ask why we don't wear gloves, but we really need that kind of feel and dexterity in the fingertips to feel how the glass is moving and be able to work with it.
So once the glass comes out, Dana, can you describe, you get your glass, and I imagine there's all sorts of choices to make in the color and texture of the particular cullet that you choose to use. But then what do you do when it comes out with the honey dipper, if I'm understanding this correctly?
Well, when it comes out, it's kind of like a ball at the end. And if you stop moving, it'll start to drip. So it will actually form like a natural teardrop shape if you stop moving. But really, you have to keep rotating. That's our main goal, is to keep rotating. And then we can work with the glass in a centered sort of fashion. It depends really on what you're doing, because Jason makes more sculptural work, so it's not always keeping things on center like in pottery. You know, it's kind of compared to that.
Interesting. So you may choose at that point, I'm guessing, to blow it so that you have a hollow, thin-walled vessel or work of art, but could you also just choose to shape it or leave it not hollow? I guess, of course. That's where we get paperweights and things like that from, right? I've never really thought about it before. Neat. So what kind of work do you like to make, Dana?
I recently got really into working with enamels, so painting just on sheet glass and firing it in a kiln to a point where the actual enamel fuses to the glass and becomes sort of one with it. But I love blowing glass. I think the experience of it is really fun, but I don't necessarily make a lot of my own artwork from blown glass anymore. So I like being in every shop, really. But
so the hot shop is where you start from raw materials to actually make glass. And you mentioned cullet. We also, at least I always think of sand as being part of the glass making process. Is that ever part of it too?
Yeah, I mean, that's the initial kind of product is silica, you know, that makes up a large percentage of the glass. We get our glass pre-melted, so it comes in chunks of glass already that comes to us that's been melted one time. So the raw material, or the what they call batch, is a little more harmful to have around. So it's something that in an educational facility, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to try to store it and charge that into our furnaces there.
You probably exposure to the dust.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
But the thing that I'm – a couple questions is – and by the way, these are folks from the Pittsburgh Glass Center, and we have things to tell you about what's going on at the Pittsburgh Glass Center, but it's fun to just get interested in it as we talk right now. And Jason Fork you just heard his voice, and Daniel Laskowski are here. So can the cullet be recycled glass? Can it be crushed recycled glass, or does it need to be the raw material that's been especially prepared to go into the hot shop?
Yeah, we can recycle our own glass, but we can't take like bottling glass and things like that and throw it into our furnaces. It's a very different kind of need or usage for that kind of glass with the industrial glass compared to a studio glass like we want to use.
Understood. And then, so after glass is created, I guess you could stop after you finish working with it while hot, or it could go to another shop. Is that?
Well, we always, if it's heated up and, you know, brought to melting point, it has to go through a cooling process. It's called an annealing process. So generally our kind of standard annealing process for blown and some thicker things up to an inch or so, we cool those down for about 14 hours. And then once it comes out of there, then you can make decisions about, you know, do I want to sandblast this surface and make it frosted, or do I want to carve it? You know, do I want to do some engraving or sawing or...
Or enameling.
Yeah, or enameling, yeah.
This is right. And you could also make the choice, and I'm thinking about folks that have never done this before, you could make the choice to start with glass that has already been formed.
Mm-hmm.
How cool. How did you get into this?
I went to a small school in Kansas called Emporia State University, and when I moved there, I just happened to room with a guy that took the class, the glass blowing class, and he said, you know, he told me, man, you gotta try this thing. It's pretty cool. So I went down there and took one class, and then that turned into wanting to follow it up and take another class. And then about a year later, I talked to the professor and I told him that I thought I wanted to pursue this, and he, you know, he thought it was a good idea. So
that's incredible. Now, Pittsburgh Glass Center has been teaching community members for years, adults as well as kids, in addition to being a home for, you know, professional artists. Tell me about the high school program, and in particular, there's a high school reunion exhibit that just opened and is going to run through January 26th of next year.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about it, and I'll let Dana talk a little bit about it too, because she's part of the show. So we've had a high school program running at the Glass Center since 2003, and I took it over in 2006. So we've had a lot of success and a lot of students come through that program. We figured this year that we've had over 500 students that have been part of the high school program in some way or another. And we thought that it was time to kind of take a look at, you know, what those students were doing and which ones were continuing to pursue GLASS. So we asked 12 students that went through this program to come back and have an exhibition in the Hodge Gallery at the Pittsburgh GLASS Center. And so that's what's there right now. We have 12 of our former students that all kind of make different kinds of work in GLASS, and it's all on display right now.
Tell me about some of your work that's there, Dana.
So some of the work that I have up is the enameled glass that I was talking about, and I'm really into illustration and drawing, and that's always been something that I've been fond of and drawn to, no pun intended. And so there are just panels of glass, and a lot of the work is kind of me working through, you know, being home and certain things that have come up while I've been home, and it's pretty emotional and personal, but that's usually what I make my work about, is personal feeling and emotion. And
how long have you been back in Pittsburgh full time?
I think 2 years now, or a year or so. Yeah.
Yeah. I got so lost in the engineering of this and the technique, because it is kind of foreign. I mean, we can all kind of imagine what painting with a brush is like, or even pottery, but it's not often. The only exposure I can think of is bending glass in chemistry class, mm-hmm. right, to make something. So you get so tied up with the process itself that you forget that here you have a chance to really express yourself through sculpture and painting and shapes. It's just incredible. Now, there's a special event or two associated with the high school reunion exhibit.
Yeah, we have kind of a secondary opening this Friday, which also will coincide with our current students that are in the SIO2 program displaying their work. So that's this Friday from 6 to 9. And then on Saturday, there's also an educator open house that is Saturday morning, I think at 11 a.m. And so that's an opportunity for teachers to kind of come in and, you know, they can kind of implement or talk about the program to their students as well. Teachers come in, they get a chance to see glass being made and get to make some sort of thing themselves. I'm not sure what they'll be making on Saturday, but it's usually a tile or a paperweight or something like that.
Now, the Pittsburgh Glass Center is at 5472 Penn Avenue, and their phone number is 412-365-2145. And they have a beautiful website where you can see some of the works of glass and also get more information about the open houses, and it's at pittsburghglasscenter.org. Anything else either of you would like to mention? It's really been fun to talk about this. You just never think about, you guys do, but other folks don't. Anything else you'd like to mention?
I would just say a little bit more about the program. We'll be starting classes back up just after Christmas, usually the first week of February. So if there's any students that are interested in getting involved in the program, we meet once a week on Tuesdays from 3:45 to 6:15. It's an after-school program, and so it's a great opportunity to kind of get involved at the Glass Center.
And Dana, any other words for you?
I just would encourage anyone that's interested to stop by or to do a little bit of research online even, and go on YouTube and, you know, kind of see what we're about. And I really encourage kids that are in high school to take the chance and take the class, and we work it out with them so that they can afford to take the classes. So money is like kind of an issue, but it really shouldn't deter people from experiencing it and coming to the Glass Center.
Well, I think it's very fortunate that we have a Glass Center here in Pittsburgh and that can be used by folks from all over the region. Thank you both for being here this morning. PittsburghGlassCenter.org. is how you can learn more about them online. I'll also post that on our Facebook page in a second or two. Thanks to Jason Fork and Dana Laskowski. I wonder if they're going to listen to me celebrate birthdays. You can even sing if you want to, but in fact, thanks for not bringing any objects of art with you, because I might break them if we get too close. It's birthday time. Happy birthday to Rose of Sewickley from your mom and dad.